Tuesday, November 29th, was marked for me as the day when something turned out just right. When I tasted the heady wine of success, a project completed, and just as I'd hoped it'd be. I spent the early morning working with Liz on my few words to say at the Jewish luncheon, and going over reports and facts and figures for my interview with Merrill Sechrist. And then at 12, Mr. C.F. Palmer came with Madam Shumatov, bringing the finished FDR portrait. I'd asked Clark Clifford to be with us, to represent the White House Historical Association, and because I always value his presence. When I came out, the portrait was on an easel, covered, standing between the archway in the West Hall and the dining room entrance. The air was electric with excitement. Mr. Palmer and Clark and I stood around, and Madam Shumatov pulled back the cloth. It was marvelous. Leaning on the rail of a ship, with his navy cape around him, a young and vigorous Roosevelt looked at us, almost as though he would speak. I was delighted. For once, I did not lack for words to express my full and unreserved admiration and gratitude. We practically fell into each other's arms with congratulations on the project's being completed. We talked about where it might hang. I'd planned it either for Lyndon's office or for the cabinet room. Mr. Palmer thinks it should be above the fireplace in the president's office. He and Clark discussed the ways in which to handle it for tax matters, and that was indeed a good aspect of Clark's being there. We hoped to have the unveiling about the time of President Roosevelt's birthday, January the 30th. Mr. Palmer gave me a book he had written, My Years as a Slum Fighter. He's almost as passionate about that as he is about his memory of Roosevelt. I asked him how he got immersed in it, and he said, because I'm a real estate man. I have some big buildings in Atlanta, and about 35 years ago, I could see their value being eaten into by encroaching slums. He gave me some of the FDR Warm Springs matches, promised to send a list of the people that he'd particularly like to have invited to the unveiling. Then we said goodbye, but Clark lingered a few minutes at my request. He told me that Peter Hurd had returned the check, or rather his lawyer had, the White House Historical Association, and asked to have the portrait of Lyndon returned to him, that he would not have made a price of $6,000 unless he thought it would be accepted as the official portrait. He, Clark, felt that the only thing to do was to return the portrait. I feel sad about the whole thing. I live with and love one of Peter Hurd's landscapes here at the White House and another in the ranch called the Anvil Cloud in one of his early WPA days outside Lyndon's office here. But his portrait of Lyndon simply didn't come off. And now there's disappointment and hurt feelings, and there was too much publicity from his end of it, and I feel sad all around. I talked to Clark about the new Attorney General. He told me quite simply and straightforwardly that he would not accept it if it were offered. He had no interest in it. He felt that his preparation and his interests lay in the field of foreign affairs. I was keenly disappointed, but obviously it was final. I had a brief visit with Dr. Berkeley and Dr. Brown and Dr. Vos and Dr. Hurst about this ridiculous minor ailment, arthritis, rheumatism, or trigger finger, whatever it is, and promised to try their paraffin bath. And then I went out to the showroom to a luncheon of the United Orthodox Jewish Ladies to accept a scholarship which they are giving me. A scholarship in sociology at Yeshiva University's Stern College for Women in New York City. The recipient will be able to devote time to special study of the problems of poverty. Mrs. Nathan Wadler, the president, and Mrs. Carl Marcus escorted me in. It was a brief little ceremony, an introduction, with some mighty fine words that always make me squirm, feel grateful, and wish I could live up to them, a plaque, and then my response. I'd written it this morning. If anyone should ask my husband what he regards as his most lasting accomplishment during his term in office, I feel sure he would say the 16 education bills passed in the last 3 years. It was in and out in less than a half hour, and yet they were appreciative, and I was glad to be the trigger for one more scholarship. The papers are full of Truman Capote's party. I felt pleased that Linda had been there, that she's launched in a very interesting life, with excitement, with stimulating people, a most extraordinary chance to learn and grow, and a girl who's taking advantage of it. I spent the afternoon working on my speech for New York. It was hard. The first draft was nothing but fine words. I was trying to turn it into something personal. I met with Mrs. Provenson, worked an hour and a half, and realized that it just wouldn't do. Liz was with us, and I gave her enough of my own words and thoughts to make one I'll feel at home with. And she, bless her heart, stayed until 10 o'clock at night, molding it into a speech more like me. But between 5:30 and 7, we both met with Merle Sechrist and Henry Diamond in the Yellow Oval Room for an interview that was a sort of summary of the work in beautification. I had called Diana's office and gotten some excellent little vignettes of what the youth service groups were doing. At 7 o'clock, I went bowling with Dr. Hurst. He's in town for a medical committee and just called up to say he'd like to swim or bowl or just visit with me. I shot 145 the first game, much to his discomfiture, and 90 the second, which he won handily. And then we came home, and the two of us ate a steak in the lovely family dining room, the second day of my self-imposed diet. What a good friend, and a worthwhile